Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, UAE send a strong message to their Tour de France rivals by winning the biggest warm-up race with one of their super domestiques. I'll be looking back at Del Toro's win, Sexas's crash and Van Aert's stage win and subsequent exit from the race. I'll also be discussing Remco Evenepoel's incredible power that he revealed in a recent video, plus the Copenhagen Sprint, Tour de Pyrenees and the Mur Classic Gerardsbergen. This week in the world of racing, we learnt what Remco Evenepoel's threshold power is, or at least what it was back in the spring ahead of the Classics. So he put out a video on his own YouTube channel last week in which it was revealed that his FTP at the time was around 425 watts. More on that later in the show. We also learnt that Liam Slock of Lotto Antimarché took his first pro victory yesterday at the Grand Prix Gippingen, and it wasn't done in fine style, but rather memorable style. This is the photo finish. And then this is what happened. And this is the type of content he can expect from other people for the foreseeable future. Big congratulations, Liam. You will certainly never forget that one. We also learned that the Los Angeles Olympic road race course is good for Pogačar, but perhaps not tailor-made for him. The route for the race was announced last week, and at the end of the 250 kilometres, it will climb to the Griffith Observatory, a 3.9 kilometre climb with an average gradient of 4.9%. Which makes it just a little bit harder than the Poggio in Milano-San Remo. Better than a flat finish for him, I guess, but obviously steeper would have been better. And finally, we learned that Paul Sexas has just done something that Tadej Pogačar has never done in his career. He pulled out of a stage race. All eyes were on the Frenchman last week at the Tour Auvergne-Rhône Alpes, but unfortunately, we never really got to see him in full flight. On the penultimate day, he crashed on a descent, and whilst he and his team put in an amazing chase to get back into contention from 4 minutes down, his injuries led to him abandoning the race early on the eighth and final stage. Which was a real disappointment for most fans, I'd say, because I think we were all looking forward to seeing just how he stacked up against the other riders in the race, even without the main contenders for the upcoming Tour de France. Now, the biggest indication we did get was from him on stage six, where a break of 60, yes, 60 riders got up the road, with the GC favourites scrabbling behind to limit their losses. On the climb to the finish that day, Sexas rode hard and dropped everybody except Isaac Del Toro of UAE. After a long time setting the pace and not distancing the Mexican, Sexas made him do some work on the front and the pace seemed to slow slightly because it got a bit cagey. Nevertheless, they put 12 seconds into Matteo Jorgensen and more into everybody else. That stage was actually won by Maxim van Hulst, racing for the first time since breaking his pelvis at the Klasse High End back in February. In his post-race interview, he claimed to be on the best form of his career so far after a tough training camp with Remco Evenepoel and his Red Bull teammates. At the line, he outsprinted a very disappointed Tobias Halland-Johannessen of Uno X. And incidentally, that stage was ridden at an average speed of 44 kilometers per hour, despite 3,000 meters of climbing over 180Ks, which is bonkers. It was Van Hill's teammate though, Luke Tuckwell, who went into a very healthy lead in the GC that day after finishing third on the stage. 1 minute and 12 over Armurai and 2 minutes over Guillaume Martin, both of whom had also been in that 60 rider move. Jorgensen sat best place of the big favourites in fourth, 2:34 down, while Sexas and Del Toro were left with over 3 minutes to make up. Doable though, as we would see on the final two stages of the race. So on stage 7 to Grand Colombier, Del Toro rode his traditional pacing strategy up the final climb, i.e. not going too deep until he really needed to, and then giving it everything to the line. He caught and passed Lidl Trek's Juan Ayuso, who'd gone quite early. And actually, it was quite funny watching his post-stage interview. When asked why he'd gone so early, he said, "Because I'm stupid." Anyway, going into yesterday's final stage, Tuckwell was still in yellow, but with Jorgensen, Del Toro and Ayuso all within a minute and 6 seconds, it was always going to be a tough ask to stay in it. He didn't in the end, but he and Red Bull did a fantastic job yesterday. So at the end of a very hard day with 4,000 metres of climbing, he was paced up that final climb, the Plateau de Soleil by Van Hills, his teammate, and that was crucial to his end result. Up front, it was Del Toro going early on that occasion. He had a great lead out from his teammates and then went himself with 8Ks to go, never to be seen again. Matthias Schelmoser played the perfect teammate role behind, setting a pace from which Ayuso was able to attack and go clear himself. He never really ate into the advantage of Del Toro though, who was across the line exactly a minute ahead of the Lidl Trek rider. Johannessen got third on the day for Uno X, bouncing back from what had been a disappointing start to the week, with Schelmoser himself hanging on for fourth. Tuckwell, though, finished a very credible eighth, and although his 1 minute 43 deficit was too much to retain yellow, it did mean he finished on the second step of the final GC podium, 54 seconds behind Del Toro, but 23 in front of Ayuso in third. Jorgensen, who finished with Tuckwell yesterday, fell two spots in the GC on that final day to fourth, with Johannessen in fifth. And the rest of the top 10 looked like this. Schelmoser, Alex Brooks, Christian Rodriguez, Para from Caja Rural, great result for him and them, and then Guillaume Martin in 10th. So, Isaac Del Toro proving yet again that he is a pure racer and winner. In winning the final two stages and the GC, he took his career tally of victories to 29, eight of which have come this season. And they have not been small wins either, all of them at World Tour level. So two stages and the GC at the UAE Tour in February, a stage and the GC at Tirreno Adriatico in March, and now two more stages and the GC at the Dauphiné. He'd never actually won a World Tour level stage race overall before this season, but now he's won three. And what makes it even scarier for rival teams is that of course he'll be riding for Pogačar at the upcoming Tour de France. Given what we've seen, there's no reason to think Del Toro himself couldn't finish on the final podium in Paris, even if he has to do a fair bit of work for his team leader. And what makes his result here even more impressive is that it wasn't even close to being UAE's A-team supporting him. They did a great job, but only one of them, Pavel Sivakov, might be lining up for the Tour de France in July. Del Toro had lost a minute to some of his rivals in the team time trial, but he was as relaxed as ever, riding his own race and never panicking. It was impressive to watch. Pogačar, incidentally, will return to racing this week at the Tour de Suisse, so we'll get an insight into his form there. I'm going to go out on a limb here by predicting he'll be going pretty well. Now, you may have noticed that there were no Netcompany Ineos riders in the top 10 on GC, despite a very good team time trial from them. They ended up having a nightmare of a race in the end. Sam Watson, the British champion, crashed twice, eventually withdrawing before stage 7. GC leader Oscar Onley had a really scary sounding crash on stage 6, and although he finished that day remarkably, he didn't start the following one due to the injuries he'd sustained. Carlos Rodriguez was never really in the GC game, and his efforts at getting up the road to win a stage didn't bear fruit, whilst Kevin Vaucelin was off the pace on the bigger mountains. Even Dorian Godon couldn't deliver them a win on the only sprint stage of the race. He's been consistently delivering the goods on those kinds of stages so far this season, but apparently came into the race recovering from illness, so he clearly wasn't at his best level. Hopefully, they can turn it around before the upcoming Tour de France. And I guess the same could be said for Seixas at this point. He's now got just under 3 weeks until the start of the Tour. In that time, his wound should have healed, but I guess the bigger question is how much energy that will have taken and how much it's going to disrupt his final preparation. Although I guess if they're going to look at it positively, the forced rest now might be a good thing, particularly when it comes to the final week of the Tour de France. Now, let's not forget, incidentally, it's going to be his first ever Grand Tour, so he'll be learning as much about himself as the rest of us will learn about him watching him. Alright, just to wrap up the other stages from the Tour Auvergne-Rhône-Alpes, Visma took a brilliant win in that team time trial, despite Van Aert dropping very early and Tulitz succumbing to a puncture later on. Netcompany took second that day, but also had their own problems. Watson dropped his chain early on and the team went on without him. Onley dropped his and then they waited, much to Vaucelin's disappointment. Quinn Simmons, the US champion, took an equally impressive win the following day from the breakaway on a stage ridden at 47 kilometers per hour, despite 2,000 meters of climbing. The group just about held off the peloton behind, thanks largely, in the final at least, to a huge pull from Movistar's Pablo Castrillo. Van Aert won the sprint behind that day and won the sprint again the following day, that time for the win. And that was actually just his second road win this season, after Paris-Roubaix of course, but he didn't start the next day due to a swelling in his elbow. A couple of days into the race, we learned that he crashed on his time trial bike in training ahead of the race itself, and it appears the injuries were slightly worse than first thought. He is hoping to get back on track in time for the Tour de France, although it is going to be tough. Despite his stage win last week, he didn't really look like the Wout van Aert we're also used to seeing. I do expect him to be good at the Tour de France though. He's got so much talent, he can start a 3 week race under par and still come good. We've seen it from him before, haven't we? Just finally, Anton Charmig won stage 2 for Uno X. It was yet another win from a breakaway actually. In fact, 4 of the 7 road stages were won from the day's early break, which is unusual in this era, especially in a 1 week race. Just a quick nod to the GCN shop now. It won't have escaped your attention. There's a pretty big 3 week race coming up in France in a few weeks' time. And as such, we've got some special edition merchandise. including a brand new design to add to our very popular print collection. Just like before, it'll be available in A3 and A4 sizes, and it will come framed as well. You can find that and everything else we sell at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or by scanning the QR code that's on the screen right now. All purchases go towards funding our free-to-view videos here at GCN, including this racing news show. So thank you for your support if you've already made a purchase, and thanks in advance if you're about to make one. Right, I'm going to move on now, as there's quite a lot of racing to get through from the last week. In the Copenhagen Sprint, all went to plan for Lorena Vibes on her return to competition after being disqualified from the Giro d'Italia. That was her 11th win from 21 days of racing this year, if you discount that opening Giro stage. It was an all-Dutch podium actually on the day, with Charlotte Kohl in second and Nienke Veenhoven in third. In the men's, we did have a bunch sprint, but not with all the sprinters contesting it. There was a really strong breakaway that required a very fast chase, and in that chase, there was a massive crash on the penultimate lap. That resulted in a huge split in the peloton, and then to make matters even more complicated, the rain started falling very heavily soon after that. The break was eventually caught, but it was inside the last kilometre, and of the sprinters who'd got through, Jasper Philipsen was the fastest. He finished just ahead of local favourite Tobias Lund, with Welsford third for Netcompany, and Lund's teammate Gudmestad in fourth. At the Moor Classic Gerardsbergen, Paul Magnier took another win for Soudal Quickstep. His sprint on the lower slopes of the climb to the finish line was so fast, he put 2 seconds into the next best rider, that being Floris van Tricht of the NSN development team. Jenne Burkmoes was third, and that result was particularly impressive because he'd been in the breakaway, got caught before the climb to the finish, and still somehow managed to get third. Paola Blasi was in a class of her own at the Tour Féminin des Pyrénées. She put almost 2 minutes into everybody else on the second stage into Bagnères de Bigorre, scaling the Col du Tourmalet in record time. Dominika Vlodacic gave UAE a 1-2 on the GC, with Juliette Berthet in third. Stages 1 and 2 were won by Martina Alzina and Aline Janssen, respectively. And just finally, at the Giro Next Gen, Casper Haugland won the opening stage after an epic 56-kilometre solo breakaway. The Decathlon development rider had been in a group of three, but dropped them and then held off the bunch by a single second at the line. And he was really dying in the closing kilometres as well. His gap was almost 5 minutes with just 15Ks to go. A win is a win though, and they don't come much more hard-earned than that, so congratulations to him. Right, I'm going to briefly skirt back to that Remco Evenepoel video now. It's really great actually that he does them because it offers a real insight into the daily life of a pro rider on a training camp. This one was done at the team's altitude training camp, which was in Tenerife back in March, where he was training ahead of his stint at the Spring Classics this year. So he talked about the calories that he'd burnt and consumed on one of the days, but the headline that most publications ran with last week was his impressive power at threshold, which is not really news, right? You don't become a multi-time world time trial champion and Olympic time trial champion unless you've got a very high FTP. What a lot of people seemed surprised about, though, was his power to weight is right up there with the best, and yet he doesn't seem to be able to consistently go toe-to-toe with the likes of Tadej Pogacar or Jonas Vingegaard at the biggest stage races. But there is a lot more that goes into pro bike racing than a high power to weight ratio. One of the biggest things is being able to ride at that threshold, deep into a stage, and sometimes deep into the third week of a race. That requires incredible day-to-day recovery on the part of the athletes and a huge resistance to fatigue, which Evenepoel does have. Obviously, we've seen it at La Vuelta, which he won, and we've seen it when he finished on the podium of the Tour de France a couple of years ago. But it just doesn't seem quite as good as the likes of Pogacar or Vingegaard, at least not right now. I would hazard a guess, actually, that Evenepoel's power to weight at threshold is slightly better than his teammate Florian Lipovic. However, the German is metronomic and consistent, so he doesn't have the huge performances that Evenepoel can produce, but he rarely has a bad day or even a bad climb. And the proof is in the results when you look back at them. Evenepoel's last podium placing on GC at a World Tour level stage race was that Tour de France 2 years ago. Whilst in those 2 years, Lipovic has had 6 podiums at GC at World Tour races, but not a win. Lipovic has won just 3 races in his career so far, whilst Evenepoel has 74. It's interesting, isn't it? And I think just underlines how incredible Vingegaard and Pogacar are as cyclists. It's very rare to see them have a really bad day, and even when they do, they don't lose that much time generally. When Evenepoel has a bad day, it often completely ends his chances on GC, and much of the time, it does feel as though that's down to his temperament as much as his legs. Evenepoel, though, has been a winner from the very start of his racing career, and it kind of feels like he struggles to get his head around suffering at the hands of other riders. Which I'd say is completely understandable, because when you're used to dishing out the pain yourself, it must be quite hard when the shoe is on the other foot. I mean, I hope he can develop on that front in stage races, time will tell. Although perhaps time is not on his side at this point. He might only be 26 years old, but the top three from the Dauphiné last week are 22, 21 and 23 respectively. The kids really are starting to dominate, aren't they? I just hope to see him in the form of his life at the Tour de France this year. That would really help make the race more exciting. If there's one thing you can guarantee with Remco Evenepoel, it's drama, one way or the other. Anyway, let me know your thoughts if you watched that video on YouTube. You can leave your comments just down below. Right, that is all for this week's Racing News Show. I'll be back next Monday to go through the Tour de Suisse, in which Pogačar returns to competition for the first time since Romandie, plus the Tour de Suisse Women's, the Tour of Belgium, the Tour of Slovenia, and the Route d'Occitanie. See you then.